Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 15. This is the story of the Raghava Pandits. This is called the Coconut Lila. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was at visiting Sarvabhauma, or rather he was having lunch at Sarvabhauma's house in Jagannath Puri. And while he was sitting with all the devotees, Lord Chaitanya was glorifying one devotee named Raghava Pandit. And these verses are all the direct and personal words of Lord Chaitanya. So he says, Shuna Nari Narikelera Kata. Narikela means Nariel. Narikela means coconut. And Kata means like Harikata, Lila Kata. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, just listen to the coconut kata. Like we have Hari kata, listen to the talks about the coconut. So this whole lila, he's describing, by describing this pastime of Raghava Pandit and his offering of coconuts, he's teaching so many aspects of Vaishnava Sadachar and Bhakti Bhajan. And we heard yesterday how much care and attention and enthusiasm and endeavor and eagerness which Raghava Pandit put into his service. We heard that Raghava Pandit, he had a coconut grove near his house, and he had hundreds of coconut trees. So it was easy for him to procure coconuts for Thakurji's seva. But when someone would come to him and say, Raghava, do you know that there are some very good coconuts 20 miles away? 20 miles away. He would go there. He would go 20 miles away just to get those good coconuts for Thakurji's pleasure, his deity's pleasure. And the coconuts locally were costing like five gandas. And these coconuts that were being sold 20 miles away were selling for 4 panas each, which means at some type of currency, monetary value. These coconuts that were 20 miles away were more costly. They cost more, and he said when he heard about it, he was very eager. And eagerly and with great endeavor, he ran 20 miles away just to get some good coconuts for Thakurji. Although right next to his house, he had hundreds of trees with millions of coconuts on it. So this shows how much endeavor a devotee can undertake to please his Lord. He never thinks that he's offered the best thing. He always wants to offer something better and better and better to his Lord for his pleasure. So then we heard he was about to make an offering, and some of his servants were bringing 10 coconuts to offer to Thakurji on a tali. And 10 coconuts is quite heavy. 10 coconuts weighs maybe 5 kilos. That's a heavy thing, 4 kilos. So when he was waiting to give these coconuts or present these coconuts to Raghava Pandit, he held the tray of coconuts, the tali, in one hand, and he put his hand up like this above the door. He put his hand just to lean there, to change his posture, to relax. And there was some dirt up there in the doorway. And then he came back with that hand and he touched the tray. And that's where the story leaves us there. Dwarera upar bite teno hatadila se hate fala chunila pandita dekila. Raghava Pandit, he saw that the servant touched the ceiling above the door and then touched the coconuts with the same hand. Pandit Kahi, Dwari Loka Kari Gatayate Tara Paraduli Uri Lagi Uparabhite. Then Raghava, seeing this, that he touched this doorway which had dirt and smoke or whatever, he said, listen, people are always coming and going through that door. The dust from their feet blows up and touches the ceiling. I mean, in other words, people are walking barefoot in and out of the deity kitchen or in and out of the house, and there's dust on their feet. And who would ever think of it? Who would ever think of this? Who would ever even see this? Well, there's dust on their feet, and that dust is rising up and collecting on the ceiling. And then you put your hand up there just to relax and touch that dust, and then you, with that foot dust from the devotees, you touch Thakurji's tray. Now you contaminate the tray. The tray is already like bhoga. I mean, it's a prasad. It's already offered to devotees. So then he says, Se bite hatadiya phala parashila Krishna yogya nahi phala apavitra hoila. After touching the ceiling above the door, you have touched the coconuts. Now they cannot be offered to Krishna because they are contaminated. Just see how strict. How strict he was in his service to his Thakurji. How clean. And then we sometimes you see these families in Krishna consciousness, there's a mother and father and some children, and they have a refrigerator, one refrigerator, and they're keeping the bhog and their fruits and other things, and then their children eat some cereal or eat some bowl of fruits, ice cream, whatever, and they can't finish it. They say, oh, mommy, I can't finish it. Oh, put it in the refrigerator and keep it for later. So then that muchi contaminated uchishta, you know, eaten, half-eaten food of that boy or girl goes in the refrigerator. And then all the bogas in there, the fruits and vegetables that are to be offered to Thakurji later, it's all mixed up and becomes one. It becomes one contaminated muchi mess. And so this is very much unconscious consideration. No vichar, no consideration. The cleanliness and purity in the service of the Lord. And as we mentioned yesterday, Srila Prabhupada was telling us that there's three requirements in deity service. This we must ensure. And he didn't say that you have to offer a new outfit every day or every month or any time, but he did say that if you want to have perfection in deity worship, there should be punctuality. Punctuality is that things should be on time. And even this story we read yesterday about Raghava Pandit, he was very concerned. He says, I forget where it was. Oh yeah, he said, listen, there was very little time to offer the coconuts. They were brought very late. It was already late for the offering. So here it's showing that even 500 years ago, this concern for punctuality, for timely service, for the pleasure of the Lord was very much in place. And among the members of Gaudiya Vaishnava of Sampradaya. So Prabhupada said, everything must be very punctual, on time. Thakurji eats at one, he eats at one. And Srila Prabhupada, he was the pure servant of Krishna, and he had the same mood of punctuality. He was very punctual. At this time he's put his shoes on, at this time they would hand him his cane, at this time the door would open, and this time he would step out the room to go for his morning walk. Even the time he would put his shoes on, they would have everything ready for him. This is describing Lilamrita. That he would finish his morning Gayatri after his bath and go out for his morning walk. And it was like clockwork. He would stand up and he would walk towards the door to leave the apartment or the room in the temple. Then they would have his shoes lined up and he would step into his shoes. Then a second later they would hand him his cane. Then they opened the door. And it went like clockwork. And he didn't waste a minute. Everything went so smoothly. And if he didn't, then the servants would find out about it right away. And Vrindavan, when Prabhupada was here, he had two chokis, or rather, I don't know if you call them chokis, but two asans. One had a choki in front of it and one didn't. Choki is a small table. And they were on either side of the door. They used to be there in his house in Vrindavan temple. I don't know if they're still there. But there's two small wooden seats with a pillow on them. And a pillow behind, with no backing. Maybe small backing. And Prabhupada would chant Gayatri in one, facing east, and the other one he would eat in. So he would chant his Gayatri in one seat. He would take bath around 12:30, then chant his Gayatri. Then he would get up from that seat and sit in the next seat. Next one. That would be the Bhogasan, where he would take his bhog. And then he had a little bell there. And exactly at 1:02, he would ring the bell. Because he would eat every day at 1 o'clock, exactly. He would have massage at 11 o'clock, bath around 12, then Gayatri, then eat at 1. So that Shruti Kirti, or whomever was serving Prabhupada, they would run out, Prabhupada, everything's ready, the dal's ready, the sabji's ready, we're just finishing the chapatis, and the rice is almost done. He said, and then Prabhupada would say, bring whatever you have. So he'd bring the dal, and he'd bring the sabji. But Prabhupada, the chapatis are almost ready. I don't care. I don't want them. The rice is almost ready. I don't want them. So Prabhupada would eat sabji and dal. He would eat rather slowly, half hour, 40 minutes. Then he would get up. and take a little rest. And then Shruti Kirti said, Prabhupada, it's 5 minutes. 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 seconds, 10 seconds. Prabhupada said, forget it. So obviously the servant, he got very serious very soon. The next day, everything was ready. So this is the first point, punctuality. Not that, oh Krishna, you know, you have to understand, I'm making special offering, and usually I offer you 5 things for lunch, but today I'm going to offer you 15 things, but it's going to be 1 hour late. Krishna says, you jerk, you nonsense, you fool, stupid puggle. You know, I don't care if you know, I want to eat on time, I'm hungry. I've been playing all morning with my friends, I want to eat. You're just wrapped up in your own kitchen, Bob, and you're not really thinking of pleasing me. Besides, you're going to eat all those 15 things later anyway. So better you have it on time. If it's one thing, have one thing on time, which I explained by telling the anecdote of Prabhupada. You can make 500 offerings, fine. It has to be on time. No, but Krishna, it's a big day. You know, it's really a big day, Krishna. I'm going to make I am going to make aham karta. I am the karta. I'm going to make 108 preparations for your birthday. Oh, that's nice. When will they be ready? They'll be ready next year. I didn't say which birthday. I'm starting now, but they'll be ready by next Janmashtami. This is not a very appropriate bhav. If you want to make 108 things and you're slow, then you start 2 weeks beforehand. But whatever, when that offering comes at 11 o'clock at night, it should be every, it's not, oh, there's one more thing, and one more thing. It's, oh, 5 more minutes, and 5 more minutes, and 5 more minutes, and 5 minutes, and 5 more minutes. Because we've seen it hundreds of times in temples and people's homes where they make Krishna wait, and it's a big offense. Better you offer 2 things on time than 3,000 things late. Of course, you don't get so much ego gratification. You don't get so much glorification of your mind, but you please Krishna. And that's the basic. Second requirement for proper deity worship is cleanliness. All the fruits should be washed, all the nuts should be washed, all the raisins should be washed, the dates, all dried fruit. Practically speaking, the law of the kitchen is, wash everything except the flour. Atta, you say atta. Besan atta, gehun atta, chana atta, it's called flour, right? I don't mean mogra, and that flour. So, you wash the dry fruits? Oh, what is that? My mother never did that. What is it? You wash the raisins and the dates and nuts? Oh, that, we never did that. Yeah, but you're a malecha. And Krishna's not a malecha. He's God. And cleanliness is next to godliness. And try washing the dry fruits once and see what happens. See how much dirt and camel hair and rat stool and everything else that comes out of the water when you wash it. Oh, no, we bought this dry fruit in a very good shop. 600 rupees a kilo, one kilo cashews. Very good. Pakka shop. Acha tige. Wash it and see how much dirt comes out. And moreover, the water purifies it. Even if it's pakka clean, still it's been, the guy that's packed it, the repacked, the 50 kilo bag was repacked into 1 kilo bags and sealed. You know, sealed in these little plastic bags at the local shop. That guy that's packing them is going like this. You think that packer who's packing those 1 kilo packages, he's wearing sanitary gloves and he's washed his hands with Dettol soap 10 times and wearing rubber sanitary gloves. Oh yes, just very careful. He's this way, he's smoking cigarettes, he's wiping his rear end, anything. And he's putting on, touching the food. So everything should be washed. Because water is pavitram. It's pure. It purifies. So anything we want to offer to Thakurji, which ultimately will take, if he leaves anything, will honor the, or take the prasadam, it should be clean. So Prabhupada taught us punctuality, cleanliness, and the third principle of deity worship is simplicity. So simplicity doesn't mean that you just offer Krishna, you know, one chickpea and a slice of apple. Or you just, like in Bankhi Vihari, they understand this principle of simplicity. So every day he gets a new outfit. He gets a 99 rupee dhoti every day. They take one white dhoti that costs 99 rupees and they wrap it around him and they give him a flute and that's a new outfit. And anybody can get that Mahaprasadam. That's a little too simple. So simplicity, Prabhupada said, he defined simplicity in deity worship as don't concoct. Whatever guru has taught you, whatever you've learned from proper shastras and archan marg, then you follow those. Don't make concoction. Don't get complicated. Keep simple, let's say straightforward, simple approach to deity worship. You can have very elaborate outfits and all kinds of jewelry if you're in this kind of bhav. And Prabhupada even said for temple puja, where you have installed deities, they should be worshipped like Lakshmi Narayan, which means with grandeur and pomp and in a royal way, at least in terms of paraphernalia, although your bhav may be Madhurya bhav or Braj bhav. But if you have your personal deities, your own personal deities, then you can worship them according to your bhav, but still it should be simple. It's not like you say, oh, I saw in the market these nice chicken feathers. They had these purple and green and pink chicken feathers for sale. It looks so cute. I'm going to buy these and stick them in Krishna's hair. Because, you know, he wears peacock feathers, so why not chicken feathers? One bird's the same as the next. And they're so cute. They're pink and they're purple. Of course, they're dyed that way. There's not too many purple chickens around, or pink chickens. So they did this, I remember in L.A., they were sticking ostrich feathers. Ostrich is kind of a big bird, maybe you have in your country or something, I don't know. They have long legs and a big fat body and maybe a big neck too, I can't remember. They're like a big thing, big bird. And it's because they're a big bird, they have long feathers. They're quite long, they're about 2 feet long. And their feathers are feathers. So then the karmis would pick these or roast them or whatever they do, get the feathers. They get the feathers and then they dye them and they would sell them and people put them in their hats, you know, the big feathers sticking out, you know, whatever, because you know, it's fashion. So devotees thought this would look nice on Radharani or Rukmini Dwarkadish. So then they dressed her crown and they put these feathers on her crown. And Prabhupada was there. And he took darshan and he said, what's that? You know, what is that? You know, this is not simplicity. This is concoction. In other words, simplicity means you don't concoct things and make up things out of your whimsical ideas of what you think is beauty or a standard of puja or proper suitable offering for Radha and Krishna. So then someone says, oh, Prabhupada, those are very rare and costly ostrich feathers. I said, what? There are feathers from a bird? This is contaminated. This is dirty. You can't offer this. Well, Prabhupada, we offer peacock feathers from Vrindavan. No, that's different. Krishna personally chooses those. So we have to be maintain this principle of simplicity. Or sometimes you see that some new devotee comes and he dresses the deity and he thinks, oh, I've been seeing the deity dressed for so many years. Now I'm a Brahmin now. I'm initiated. And they've asked me to dress the deities. But see, really, these pujaris, they don't know how to dress properly. Because I have some idea of fashion and design and style. So now it's my turn to be the pujari. I'm going to show these people what really is beautiful. So I'm going to put on Thakurji's mukut. Now I'm going to put 3,492 peacock feathers. And they're going to go this way. They're going to come out about the crown. The mukut will be here. But I'm going to make it in such a way that the peacock feathers go out about 9 feet. You know? And looks like totally out of proportion, totally gross and not the least bit artistic. But I want to do this because I see these other pujaris, they don't know what beauty is. I've been watching for days. They don't know really how to make it look beautiful. So, you know, you see when Indra dresses Radhasham Sundar, everybody in India comes there to take darshan. And that, whenever he dresses, that's when all the news people come and take pictures and put on Doordarshan. In Doordarshan, these other television shows, they have pictures of deities before they start different shows, like Mahabharata. When they do the film credits, they used to have pictures of the deities in Vrindavan. And every time you see the deities on television, it's only the days that Indra was dressing. Because the people don't know Indra from anybody, but the people understand what is a standard of excellence or a standard of beauty. So when they go and they see us, this is beautiful. There's a pagri, there's a turban, there's one or two peacock feathers. Natural look. But I go to Delhi, And they had this idea, you put the crown on and then you put 3,000 peacock feathers on it. So the Lord's head is this big and the crown is like, imagine wearing a crown on your head, you're this big, you know. And I don't mean your Jagannath coming out for Rath Yatra or something. He's a Jagannath. He can wear whatever he wants. In fact, he looks quite good in his huge crown. And it's in proportion because his head is also 6 feet across. You know, this big crown he wears, special crown he wears for Rath Yatra. His head is 6 feet across, and the crown is only about maybe a foot here and a foot here. It's like, you know, it's 8 feet. So it's not so bad. It's proportionate. But when you have a head this big and the crown goes out like this, you know, and this peacock feather and this one, that one stuck here and stuck with that, and it looks like, it's called top heavy. Like you have one of these little Indian truck and they put like 50 miles high baggage on the back of it and it's going down the street. These lorries, they pack them to the sky. So Krishna's head looks like the back of a lorry and all these peacock feathers. So this is not simplicity. This is total mental concoction. The simplicity means you follow the traditional standard. This is the meaning of simplicity. Prabhupada says simplicity means you don't concoct something new. Follow the standard. And if you don't know the standard, find out. So here in this pastime about Raghava Pandit and the coconuts, it's all about cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. So he was very concerned that, you touched the dirty ceiling, now you touch this tray. Now he could argue, well, I didn't touch the coconuts. The coconut, the meat's inside the coconut, the water, the coconut pulp is there, the water's there. What's wrong with that? I only touched the tray. But he was so strict. Raghava Pandit was so strict in his cleanliness standards, he rejected these coconuts that he went 20 miles away to get. Can you imagine? He went 20 miles and he had to walk there. He walked 20 miles there and 20 miles back, 40 miles, which is about 70 kilometers or so, to get a few coconuts. When he got back, the servant contaminated him by putting a bunch of smudge and dirt from the ceiling on the tray, and he just rejected them. Can you imagine? He'd say, well, anyway, I walked 20 miles, let's wash them with water and offer them. You know, what's the big deal? Throw a little water on them and offer them. But he wouldn't compromise his standard. And Lord Chaitanya goes on. Eta bali falafele prachiralangiya aiche pavitra prema seva jagat janiya. Such is the service of Raghava Pandit. He did not accept the coconuts, but threw them over the wall. Maybe he was a little angry too. Can't say, doesn't say that, but he didn't even put them aside and say, well, I'll consider them offered and I'll eat them later. He threw them over the wall. So he didn't accept them. Raghava's service is purely based on unalloyed love. Aiche pavitra prema seva jagat janiya. And it conquers the whole world. Janiya means conquers. So his prema seva. And that's our goal. Our goal is prem seva. So in prem seva, there's such a standard of excellence, such a standard of cleanliness. Because someone says, what is your goal? To go back to Godhead? No. Our goal is not to go back to Godhead. We'll go here, there, anywhere. But our goal is to serve Krishna. We don't want to go back to Godhead unless we can serve Krishna. Just to go there and chill out or enjoy or relax or kick back or lay back and eat mangoes and watch the clouds go by, and when we get hot, we bathe in the Yamuna and sleep under the Kadamba tree, and sometimes we see Krishna and say Haribol. You know, we don't have this idea of enjoying in the spiritual world. We want to go wherever the service is, like a soldier in the army. They said, "Listen, soldier, now we're fighting a front in Africa. So you get in this boat, you go to Africa, and you fight for India." "Yes, sir." And he goes and fights. He said, "Now listen, our theater, they say the war theater. Now we're fighting in China. So you get here in this airplane and you go to China and you fight." So the soldier goes wherever the commander sends him. And he's happy. So the devotee goes wherever Krishna sends him. He has no other desire than that. But our goal, if someone asks, our goal is prem seva. We want the prem seva of Radha and Govinda. And more specifically, Radharani. It's called Radha Dasyam. To become a Dasya of Radha, or to become her servant. This is the one of the main teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Manjari Bhav, Braj Bhakti. So this is what Raghava Pandit's service is being described by Lord Chaitanya himself as Prem Seva. Pavitra Prema Seva Jagat Janiya. And this is pure. This service and love, it conquers the whole world. Tabe Yara Nari Kela Samskara Karaila Parama Pavitra Kari Bhoga Lagaila. Thereafter, Raghava Pandit had other coconuts gathered, cleansed, and clipped, and with great attention he offered them to the deity to eat. Parama Pavitra Kari. So after they were cleaned and cut and prepared, Parama Pavitra, with the topmost cleanliness, he was very sure to keep, it says, with great attention to keep them pure. Because pavitra means pure. This is the word for word, based on the Bengali words of Mahaprabhu. And the translation comes out, with great attention he offered them to the deity. See, Prabhupada, as I've been mentioning, Prabhupada very much summarized the translation when he put it in English. Because he says, with great attention. But the actual Bengali, he's saying, with great attention to keep them pure. Parama. Parama pavitra. You can also say he did this act. He offered these coconuts with the topmost purity, in the topmost purity, in the most pure fashion that he could. In other words, he made sure that no one touched the ceiling or anything like this. E matta kala amra naranga kantala jaha jaha dura grame shuniyache bhala. In this way, from distant villages, Raghava Pandit collects excellent bananas, mangoes, oranges, jackfruits, and whatever other first-class fruits he has heard about. So in this way means in the same way that he collected coconuts from 20 miles away, he would also go 20 miles away to collect mangoes, oranges, jackfruits, and any other first-class fruits he heard about. So to walk 20 miles... and 20 miles back, that's 40 miles. And the average walking speed is about 3 miles per hour. They say like that, but our experience is it can be faster. Let's say it's 4 miles an hour. He walks 20 miles there to collect the mangoes and walks 20 miles back. That's 40 miles and 4 miles an hour. That means 10 hours. So he was willing to travel for 10 hours to get first-class fruits for the Thakurji. So that, you could say, although it doesn't really compare, but that's like getting in a car and going to Delhi. It takes 3 hours to go to Delhi and 3 hours back. It's only 6 hours. Because in Delhi you can procure very wonderful fruits for Thakurji. In the middle of the winter, you can buy cantaloupe, melon, you say karbuj and tarbuj and all these things. You can buy cantaloupe, melon in the middle of the winter from Delhi for 900 rupees a kilo, and it comes from Turkey or somewhere like this. They have all kinds of imported foods that come from all over the world. And the was it Chanak Puri? Or there's some market there where all the embassies are situated, where all the different foreign embassies are situated. And they have foreign taka. They have foreign money, and they don't mind spending 900 rupees for a watermelon. Watermelon's only 5 rupees, but if you want to get a watermelon in January, then you have to bring it in from Turkey or Africa or somewhere. So these type, we, for our Thakurji in Vrindavan, Radhasham Sundar, when it's Janmashtami or some big function, the devotees go to Delhi and they buy such fruits. These big honeydew melons are from Iran and all these things. I've seen. So in the same way, Raghava Pandit, he would walk for 10 hours just to get a few good mangoes for his deity. That's inconceivable. Like we live somewhere in Bombay and someone says, oh, you know, in this part of Bombay there's some very good fruits. No, that's too far. That's like a half-hour drive. I can't do that. How can I drive there? It's too much trouble. But you have a driver. Well, yeah, I know I have a driver. But you can even send your driver. No, but he might cheat me out of 30 rupees, you know. He might try to make some money on buying those fruits. And so many ways we cut corners and calculate ourselves out of pleasing our Thakura. So Lord Chaitanya is telling these things for us to consider. These are Shastric statements. These are shlokas from Shastra. And Lord Chaitanya considers it's important. Everyone should hear this. Because in the beginning he says, Shunya sablog. He says, right? He said sabjana. Shunya sabjana. He says, all the people, everyone, should hear about Raghava Pandit. So he's only saying a few sentences. He could speak for hours, but he's speaking a group, let's see, 5, 10, maybe 15 sentences about him. And he's mentioning key points, his cleanliness, his strong attachment to cleanliness in serving his deity, his strong attachment to punctuality, and his strong attachment to working hard and taking all kinds of personal hardship to please the deity, walking 20 miles away to get the mango and walking 20 miles back, walking 10 hours just to buy some good first-class fruits for the deities. And we live in Lajpat Nagar, and we're too lazy to go to Greater Kailash to get some good quality fruits. It's like 15 minutes away. Or I remember when I was living in Vrindavan, in Ramanreti, there wasn't any good fruits, but by Banki Bihari Mandir, that's a whole Brahmin community there. Goswamis from Banki Bihari all around those houses. So all the fruit wallahs, they come there, and there's one fruit stand by Bankandi Mahadev, which is a little bit further from Banki Bihari. But he was famous in all of Vrindavan because he would go to Delhi every 2 or 3 days and buy all the best quality fruits, these big Afghan pomegranates, these big red ones. And at that time, you couldn't even find a pomegranate or anar in Vrindavan. Now you find these little ones here and there, these little tennis ball wallahs, you know, and they're not very good. But he would go to Delhi and bring back these fruits, and he'd sell them at a good price, 100 rupees a kilo or whatever. But he sold all of his stuff, because all the Goswamis. So we remember going down there to buy some nice fruits for Radhasham, and because the things around the temple are like junk. We go to Banki Bihari side, they have nice things. Pay a little more, but you get first class. So this is a kind of extra endeavor, enthusiasm that a devotee's put into their service, whether it's serving the Lord or teaching or studying or chanting or reading or preaching or any service. These qualities are important. Enthusiasm, working hard, and always meditating on the pleasure of the Lord and being punctual. Bahu mulya diya ani kariya yatan pavitra samskara kari kariya nivadan. I think I read this already. All the fruits are collected from distant places and brought at a high price. That's what it says here. These fruits are brought, they're collected from 40 miles away, and they're purchased at a high price. After cleaning them with great care and purity, Raghava offers them to the deity. E mata vyanjanera shaka mulafal, e mata chira hudum sandesha sakal. With great care and attention, Raghava Pandit prepares spinach and other vegetables, radishes, fruits, chipped rice, powdered rice, and sweetmeats. So again, we're reminded of the essential quality of his offering. Although it's interesting that this verse only mentions food. There's no mention about great care and attention. The Prabhupada is just, there's the word emata, which means in this way. So I guess this verse is referring to the other verse, with great care and attention. So this is the thing. Great care and attention. Emata pitapana shira odan parama pavichara kare sarvatam. Raghava prepares cakes, sweet rice, condensed milk, and everything else with great attention. And the cooking conditions are purified so that the food is first class and delicious. Sarva utam. So it's the topmost of everything. It's the top, it's the best of all. The topmost of everything. It's first class and tasteful. Parama pavitra. Everything is very, very clean. Kashandi, kashamdi, acharadi, aneka prakar, gandavastra alankara, sarvadravyasar. Raghava Pandit offered all kinds of pickles, such as kashamdi. He offers various scents, garments, ornaments, and the best of everything. We mentioned the other day about someone buying some saman or some water pitchers for the ashram, and this person has a standard of always buying something good quality. Someone else bought some pitchers. You can buy water pitcher for 200 rupees, or you can buy one for 1,000 rupees. This person bought the 1,000 rupee ones because they thought, oh, this is for the ashram. This is for the Vaishnav Seva. The Vaishnavas are so dear to Krishna. We should get the best quality that we can afford for them. So rather than cutting any corners, we're trying to save money for what? There's money, the best use of money is to spend it in the service of Krishna and devotees. So then he bought first-class things. So we hear this is a characteristic of Raghava, that he is also offering the best of everything. Sarva dravya sar. Dravya means objects, articles, and sara means the essence or the best, and sarva means the best of everything, the best possible thing available. Emata primera seva kari anupam yaha deke sarva lokar judaya nayan. Thus Raghava Pandit serves the Lord in an incomparable way. Everyone is very much satisfied to see him. Then Etabali Raghavere Kaila Alingane Emata Samanila Sarvabhaktagane. After speaking like this to glorify Raghava Pandit, Mahaprabhu mercifully embraced Raghava. The Lord then also offered all the other devotees a farewell with similar respect. So after they ate prasad, the Lord ate prasad at Sarvabhauma's house. He glorified the other devotees in different ways, and then he bid farewell. So we'll also bid farewell to Raghava Pandit and Mahaprabhu. And tomorrow we'll hear the story of... This was the story of Sri Chaitanya glorifying the cooking standard of Raghava Pandit. Tomorrow we'll hear about Gauranga's darshan of Nanda and Yashoda. Coming attractions. Is there any questions about this discussion or these points? Yes?
You mentioned that Raghava Pandit was angry in throwing this coconut.
Well, that's not fair. Just said, it only really said, factually it said, he threw them over the wall. So I'm just saying how I would feel. That if I had walked 40 miles to get some coconuts, and my servant put his smudgy, dirty fingers on them, and then I knew and I considered they were not offerable, then I would be a little angry when I threw them over the wall. But it doesn't say that.
But anyway, my question is about anger.
Well, does that have anything to do with our coconut leela? Are you taking off my interjection of my own, disqualifications? Anyway, go ahead.
There are many stories in Chaitanya Charitamrita when pure Vaishnava could not be recognized from the first meeting because of his external...
Yes.
So this anger, how do we understand exactly? Is it actually his inability to control his senses and his mind?
Who's his? Who you're saying
Vaishnav.
His?
If I'm looking for good association and then I find...
I mean, when Lord Nityananda kicks Shivananda Sen in the chest with a kung fu, with a taekwondo kick, because Shivananda Sen was making arrangements for the devotees when they were going from Bengal to Puri, and he didn't make the arrangements in time, and Nityananda was angry. Then he gave a nice kick to the chest. This means that Nityananda was angry. What does this mean? But actually, Shivananda Singh was so happy, oh my Lord, you kicked me in the chest. I've been blessed by the touch of your lotus feet, right? So that's Shivananda Singh getting kicked by Nityananda. So when Vaishnava's anger is, because you have to understand that a Vaishnava, he's existing in bhakti. He's actually immersed himself in bhakti. His mind, his heart, his intelligence, his senses are immersed in the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. Like the analogy Rupa is giving, like you have an iron rod. If you take the iron rod and put it inside the fire, the entire length and width of that iron rod becomes turned in the fire. It can burn, it can do everything the fire can do. Although it maintains its identity as a piece of iron, ultimately, but it becomes fireized. The front of it, the back of it, the end of it, the whole thing is red hot. So the body, mind, and senses of the Vaishnava, when they're immersed in the Srup Shakti of the Lord, which is known as Bhakti, Bhakti Srup Shakti, they become spiritualized. So his thinking, his feeling, his willing, everything he's doing is an expression of devotion, an expression of bhakti. Sometimes he's happy, sometimes he's sad, or apparently showing happiness or sadness, or concern, or no concern, or sometimes he may be angry. But all these, it's called anubhavs, all these expressions are simply coming on from the undercurrent of his devotion, or coming from his mind or heart, which are just saturated with devotion. So if you're saying a devotee sometimes shows anger, but that anger is actually an expression of his love. Just like a mother. A mother has a sthayibhav, or permanent mood of love towards her children. And sometimes she kisses him and hugs him and keeps him at her breast and feeds him. And if he misbehaves, she gives him a slap, which appears to be she raises her voice and chastises him, and it seems to be an expression of anger. It even looks like anger. Your mother's angry. And someone will say, your mother's angry at you. And you say to the mother, oh, you're angry. Oh, no, I'm not angry. I'm not angry at you. I'm just showing my love. So, and it's a fact. So I don't know exactly what you're asking, but... Like Prabhupada looked like he was getting angry sometimes with the disciples, you know. And even when they speak in a Vyasa Puja, they say, Garga Muni and Pramananda had so much association. They often say, you would never want to be around Prabhupada when he got angry. Because when he got angry, it was like a cyclone, like a tufan. Tufan? Tufan. And then he would just, he would just cut you to pieces and whatever. I mean, Prabhupada wouldn't start throwing lamps around the room and, some kind of mad, crazy tantrum. I almost said tantrum. Tantric. Tantrum. But he wasn't that like that. He wasn't uncontrolled. But he was simply raising his voice, or sometimes hitting his hand on the table, I don't remember hearing if Prabhupada ever physically did anything to his disciples. But he would express his anger if someone did something stupid or lost some money or whatever, Krishna's money. But still, that didn't diminish Prabhupada's expression of anger, did not diminish the content of his love. Or the quantity or quality of his love for the disciple. By showing anger, now he would decrease his love for the disciple, or decrease his affection. In fact, Prabhupada would often say that, I only chastise the disciples that I really love. He even said that. He said, unless you're advanced in your relationship with me, and advanced in your love for me, then I won't chastise you. Because I know that if you're a neophyte in your relationship with Guru, if the Guru chastises you or seemingly shows anger, then the neophyte devotee will respond in a negative way. They'll say, my Guru got angry. What is this? What kind of Guru is he? Oh, I don't like him. He's not nice. I better find another Guru. So this is the neophyte. So knowing that, then the Guru is always very gentle and kind to the new disciple. Oh, yes, you... do any damn thing, it's okay. But when he actually smacks or corrects or rebukes the disciple, that's the show of his love. The son is playing in the yard, and he keeps playing in the yard and keeps hitting his ball, and the ball keeps running out on the road, and he keeps running after it. And it's a very busy street, and trucks are going very fast, zip, 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 up and down in front of his house. And the mother looks out the window and sees the boy, he has his ball and a bat, and he keeps hitting it. And he always doesn't hit it towards the house. He always hits it towards the road. And he always runs in the road, and he always drops the bat, and he always runs very fast in the road to get the ball, because he's very attached to that ball. It's his everything. And always the trucks are going, jamming on their brakes and just missing him this much, running him over. And so the mother comes out, she says, don't play with the ball in the street. Don't hit it in the street. He said, yes, yes. And the next minute he hits it in the street. And she's running in the street. So finally she comes out and says, listen, you. She pulls his ear and crack, gives him a slap across the face. And he goes, ow, ow, ow. Says, look, you do that again and I'm going to, tie you up or throw you in a, you know, lock you up in the cellar or basement or something. No, so she shows some heavy anger. Why? Because she loves that son more than her own life. But some neighbor will say, oh, look, that mother, she's beating her son. Let's call the police, child abuse. That mother should be arrested. She should just let her son play freely and get run over, and that's that, you know. So this expression of anger, we have to see that, where is it coming from? What is the basis? Where is it coming? Is anger coming from a pot of, is anger, you have to source it, like they say, source it out, or what's the source? Sourcing, resourcing. So what is the source of the anger? Is it coming from a pot of envy, or is it coming from a pot of love? So if the anger is coming from a pot of envy, then it's not transcendental. But if it's coming from a pot of love, it's transcendental in terms of devotees. But if it's a mother, it also can be coming from material love. It's not transcendental, but it's not envy. She loves her son. Anger, it's the consciousness behind the anger that determines whether it's actually devotion or not. Like some people say, oh, he's really a mellow guru. He never chastises disciples, and he's really good. You should take initiation from him. He'll let you do whatever you want. Oh yeah, that's what I need. I need a guru like that. I need a guru like that that'll let me do whatever I want. Sometimes disciples or new devotees or aspiring devotees are looking for someone like that. Easygoing, soft-spoken, easygoing. Well, who's your guru? My guru is Gaura Govinda Swami. Oh, I'm not going to take initiation from him. I heard he even slaps his devotees. I heard he literally slaps his devotees right in the face, like the top of the head or top of the head. You puggle, you crazy mind. Oh, I'm not going to take initiation from him. Oh, this is terrible. And then you go ask the devotees. Yeah, I'm beating with his cane or his walking stick or something. I saw him slap because I saw. And then when the devotees would sit down for class, I was there a few times in Bhuvaneshwar. Everyone would make sure they would sit at least five feet away so he couldn't slap him. And that's when the sitting was first there. And then he would be singing Jai Radha Madhava. And then before the class starts, then so all these brahmacharis that maybe were doing kitchen seva, whatever, sleeping, who knows what. But they were somewhere. They would come running in just before the class, and they would sit right in front of the asan. And I was wondering, who are these guys? They came late. Everyone else is kind of keeping a good distance. And these guys would come right in the front. They would sit down. And then, so then Maharaj says, oh, you're not afraid? And they said, Maharaj, we're ready. And I didn't know what was going on because I was a newcomer over there. Because this is family business, you know, guru and disciple. It's a very intimate circle. So I was a godbrother, naturally, but I wasn't familiar with the dealings there so much. And so I was a guest there for 1 week, 90, maybe five or four or so, visiting there, Maharaj's association. So then, so they said, no, Maharaj, we're ready. So I said, what's happening here? So Maharaj is speaking. So what is this verse? What is from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? Vairagya Vidya. Oh, Maharaj, Vairagya Vidya, Nija Bhakti. then he gives a big slap. Damn, you don't know this verse. How many times I told, oh, you know, yes, Maharaj, you know. I said, oh, that's why they're sitting there. So the senior devotees that were really attached to the guru and really surrendered and really wanted to get the mercy, they ran in and jumped in those pole position in those front row seats to get the love slaps. The love slaps of their beloved guru, Srila Gaura Govinda Swami. So it was quite a beautiful sight to see. Excuse me?
Or you get cheated by the guru, and you have to be ready to get slaps.
Yeah, you have to be ready to get slaps from the guru. I mean, Lord Nityananda, he's also a guru, he's like Adi Guru. And he's giving a good slap to Shivananda Sen, right? See the nice painting. This is, every disciple should keep this painting in their room. See this, Rajeshri? Nityananda is giving a kick on the right hand side. Big picture, Nityananda giving a good taekwondo, you know, chest kick, or whatever they call it, to Shivananda Sen, because they were going to Puri. And he said, listen, I'm a rich guy, I'll take care of everybody's fooding and everything, housing. Don't worry. And they came in one village and Nityananda said, so where are we staying? He said, well, I don't know. He was stupid. And then, of course, this was a perfection of his life. It's a nice thing to meditate on, actually. That's like when Bhrigu Muni went to Vishnu and stepped on his chest. We told that story. Bhrigu Muni stomped on him. He didn't. Vishnu is lying in bed with Lakshmi. That's his description in Bhagavatam. Says he's lying in a flower bed, which is quite interesting for Narayan. It's in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 90. He's lying, resting in a flower bed, intimately and privately with Lakshmi Devi in the private quarters. And Bhrigu Muni busts in, runs over to the bed, and just boom, and just stomps on it while he's lying down. Not that he's standing up and gives him a kick, or sitting in his chair. He's lying in bed in the most intimate, tender setting with his wife, and Bhrigu Muni comes in and stomps on his chest, just right while he's in bed. And then Narayan gets up and says, oh, please forgive me. My chest is so hard, and you're a Brahmin, so your skin is very soft, and you must have hurt your foot. Please forgive me. Now let me wash your feet, and let me give you some food, and sit in this chair, and is everything okay? So even the Lord is ready to take slaps from the Guru. Bhrigu Muni is also a Guru. So this is the same Bhrigu Muni who's doing your Bhrigu reading. Bhrigu Muni is giving your chart. He's reading your Bhrigu is getting done by him. You know. So any.